What's up, Aggie Radio? You're listening to Overcompetitive Bystanders here on KBLU 92.3.
Yeah, we're really excited about this week. We're going to talk about some of the coolest topics that we have. My favorite topics, NFL, NBA, college sports. I feel like we've got a really good spread this week.
Yeah, we're going to hit a little bit of everything. You're even going to hear me yell at Mason a little bit this week, so it'll be awesome.
You say that like that's going to be a surprise to people.
Right, but like the past few weeks, we haven't quite yelled at each other. We've got raised our voices a little bit. I think I might actually yell on the radio.
Your father and I are not yelling.
We're just
speaking loudly.
Yeah, I don't know. You can yell all you want, but just remember that I'm still right. So we'll see. basically, we're going to talk. First, we're just going to mention it real quick. We're not going to talk about it too much. The news broke yesterday that Enes Kanter, who I personally do not like, the way his relationship with the Jazz, not very good, went to the Thunder, trash-talked the Jazz.
Yeah,
it was a big mess.
Admitted that he didn't give all his effort when he was with the Jazz.
Yeah, and I mean, one of the things that really killed me is when he went to the Thunder, he said, you know, it's so great to finally be in a real NBA organization. He'd only played for the Jazz and the Thunder. I mean, he's throwing direct jabs at the Jazz. Well, I kind of feel bad for him now. It looks like he hasn't had the best of luck, and, well, I mean, maybe it's not a luck thing, but his family has disowned him. Even to put out an official apology to the Turkish media saying, and I quote, this was his father, "I apologize to the Turkish people and the president for having such a son." That's so strong. I mean,
that's cold.
That's terrible.
Right. And for those of you who haven't read in the story, the reason why his family's disowning him is he's put a lot of support behind a huge Muslim backer that the Turkish government believes is behind the coup d'etat that happened in Turkey a couple of months ago. And so that's why they're strongly against him, is because he's given him a lot of support, not only on social media, but from what I understand, he's given him a lot of financial support as well, and they have a lot of issues with that.
Yeah, and I mean, it's really interesting to see how they've done it because, well, he changed his last name because his parents have disowned him. And he changed it to the last name of the guy who he was following, the reason he was
disowned.
And I think that just shows, you know, he really has a commitment there for this guy. And I think that's part of the issue. I think that's part of the reason his parents are not happy with him, because, well, it's just not what they are proud of. They're not happy of their son doing this type of thing and basically going against the Turkish government and supporting this coup that happened recently.
Well, and for them, he's one of like the biggest faces of Turkey. I mean, there's other like professional Turkish athletes, what have you, but he's one of the most like famous ones out there. And for him to be behind this guy who they think is, well, they know is against their country, but they think is like is part of this coup. That's why it's so strong for them.
There you go. There you go. Sorry, technical difficulties here.
There we go. That should fix it.
Yeah.
Had some mic issues there. But yeah, I think it's just crazy. I mean, I don't like Kanter. I've always been against Kanter. I mean,
I could like calling him Enes Kanter.
Yeah. There's some other names we have for him. But
not all of them are radio appropriate.
Yeah. Basically, when the Thunder were playing in the Western Conference Finals, I even tweeted out, I don't want the Thunder to win simply because I don't want Enes Kanter winning a championship. I had no issue with any of the rest of the Thunder players. It was Enes Kanter. I don't want Enes Kanter to succeed. But now I look at this and I just feel bad.
I don't feel bad per se. I'm happy to see he's standing behind his morals and what have you. But obviously, if you're like behind a guy that's against your country, with your family still in your country, you're asking to get disowned.
Yeah, that's true.
It's not a bad luck thing. It was a choice thing. He chose to turn against his family, so.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, yeah, it was a decision. I just feel like, you know, he even makes the comment that he lost all of his relatives, every single one of them. And I feel like that's got to make you feel terrible. I mean, it's just, you're alone. It sucks.
Yeah. I mean, I can only imagine how tough that would be. I literally have no way of knowing that because I've never been in that situation. But it'd be a tough situation. You lose everyone that you have ever known growing up. The worst part isn't even that, like, his friends. It was his family.
Right.
Like, I mean, friends you can replace, but you can't really replace family. And it's just, it's a tough situation. And I feel bad for him, but I also am of the opinion that I don't like him at all. Especially, like, with how he acted towards the Jazz organization. And the Jazz aren't even my number one team, so...
Right. Which,
yeah, that is. Like, I mean, they're my number two team, but I really don't like the guy, but I also, I feel for him, kind of like Mason.
Exactly. But, I mean, you might not be able to, like, replace family, but he has enough money to try. So, I mean, at least he's still rich. So.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a nice benefit. So, the next topic, we're keeping with the NBA theme for right now. We're going with the Jazz. CBS Sports recently has been really good on the Jazz. They've really loved what the Jazz have been doing. They ranked the Jazz bench number one. They said the Jazz have the best bench in the NBA, and they ranked the Jazz starters number five. I think that's awesome. There's a big part of me that I look at and I say, wow, that's a really great deal. I think the Jazz really do have one of the deepest benches. I mean, our fourth string point guard was a starter last year that did well.
Yeah, Neto was so strong. I love Neto. Shelvin Mack, while he crumbled under pressure, was still a good player. Exum on our bench will be a starter by next year, and it's going to be a huge name in the NBA. I mean, Alec Burks, when he was given time, looked good. Why is Alec Burks on here? Sorry, ignore that. I'm trying to read the roster, and they still have Alec Burks.
Oh, Alec Burks is still there.
Alec Burks.
Oh, why? Okay, Alec Burks is really good. Love Ingles, love Lyles, and with ease.
The only thing I like with Alec Burks is, like, he was really good. He just got to stay healthy.
Right.
Yeah.
And hopefully it isn't just an issue where he's just going to always be injured and going to have to retire in a couple years because he can't stay healthy. But I feel like it was just bad luck the last couple times. And I think they've had a lot of bad luck with injuries over the last couple years. But now when you have them healthy, like, this is a scary team. Like, I wouldn't want to play them. Even as a Spurs fan, like, I would be worried about them. So, for me, this totally makes sense. Their bench, they've got lots of good players because, I mean, a lot of these guys would be starters in other places and probably will get starter money when their contracts are up because, you know, they're not going to be able to pay everyone.
Yeah, I agree. I think where the Jazz are at right now, and one of the things that makes me happy about that is the Jazz are in a spot where they have depth in every position, they're good in every position, and if at some point maybe they look at it and they say, you know, let's say Joe Johnson just isn't doing it for us, we need somebody else that can do this job or this job, we have trade bait. We have somebody that we could trade and we could do anything. We can make big moves without really losing much on our own.
Right.
I'm really happy about that.
We would still have Ingles, who is a force to be reckoned with.
Yeah.
I mean, he's not one of the best players in the NBA, but he's consistent, to say the least.
Jingling Joe Ingles.
Yeah, he's solid, but, I mean, he's definitely not someone you want to rely on at all times, but he could be someone that could fill a gap for a few minutes here and there and everything. That's the thing is, like, I mean, when I look at this Jazz team, they can play almost like Kentucky when they won all those games in a row. Obviously, they fell short in the Final Four, but they went undefeated until then, where they'd put in five, and then they'd swap them out and put in five more, and they'd be able to keep going. The Jazz have a similar setup where they've got these guys that are good enough coming off the bench that they could be a starter. Let's say, like, you start out, you have George Hill and Rodney Hood and Gordon Hayward and obviously Favors and Gobert down low. Well, you put in subs, and you got Exum goes in there, and Burks, and Joe Johnson, and Trey Lyles, and Boris Diaw.
Right.
Those are a bunch of quality guys that a lot of them could be starting almost anywhere. And so they're not going to lose much when they go to their bench, and that's really – it makes sense that they give them the best bench, like, in their view.
Yeah, I mean, I agree the Jazz – probably have the best bench. One of the ones I look at that is kind of debatable is they do give the Warriors the number two bench.
I don't see that.
Andre Iguodala is on that bench.
That's why.
Sean obviously. Livingston is on that bench. I mean, Anderson Varejao is on that bench. That's a good bench. There's no doubt. But I think overall, I mean, they only listed basically the second level. I think that's what makes the difference. I think the Jazz and Golden State are very similar on that second level, but I think the Jazz have so much depth further in. I mean, we have Shelvin Mack, Raul Neto. I mean, we have the way they have this lineup on this one is ridiculous. I don't believe a word of it. But, I mean, our depth is awesome, and that's why I really look at it. I'm like, I think the Jazz can do a great job, not just with our starters, not just with our second string, but our third string is even a good lineup. I think that's what's amazing is the Jazz have depth. And even the starters are great. So the starters, they ranked fifth. And what's crazy is so they talked about how they did a vote. And the Jazz had one vote for fourth and three votes for sixth. And the rest of them were all for fifth. So they had it was a consensus. The Jazz were the fifth best starting lineup in the NBA. I think George Hill is an awesome option. I think Rodney Hood's going to keep growing as a star. I think Hayward is absolutely spectacular. Gobert's going to keep getting better. And Favors is going to keep getting better. I think the Jazz are a young team that's extremely talented and will do great things in the playoffs.
Yeah. I mean, we're really high on the Jazz, obviously, as Utah people. We love the Jazz. But I think for the first year, they're going to live up to our expectations, or at least I hope so. I mean, I hope it's not like every other year where we get hyped behind a team and all of a sudden they just crumble. But I don't think that'll happen because we have so many, like, strong players. Let's say next year George Hill just isn't working, the age gets to him, whatever. Put on Dante Exum. We're going to be fine. We have Shelvin Mack and Raul Neto behind him. We'll be okay. Like, unless our whole team, like, starts crumbling, we'll be fine. And I think that's really something important, especially with how many issues we've had with injuries. But, yeah, like, I'm really excited for the Jazz. And I think fifth for starters is right around where I put them. I'd actually have to look at all the lists. But I might put them closer to sixth than fifth. But
so the one that they have in sixth is the Toronto Raptors, which I think is a good comparison. I think the Raptors have a great lineup with Lowry, DeRozan, and Damari Carroll. But I think when you get to the forwards is where the Jazz get that advantage.
That makes sense. Looking at that, I think our starting five is better than the Raptors. Mm-hmm. As in terms of, like, all five, I think they're – top three is better than our top three, but I think our starting five is better than their starting five.
Yeah.
I take issue with them having the Clippers at number three.
I actually do too. That was one of them that I looked at and I said, I think Chris Paul is good.
Chris Paul is spectacular.
J.J. Redick's a good shooter.
Blake Griffin and DeAndre Jordan are both good down low, but they're not super versatile. Those two aren't. Mm-hmm. And then their other guys are Luke Richard, Mba Mute, and J.J. Redick. J.J. Redick, obviously a good shooter, but what else does he give you?
Yeah.
And Mba Mute, he's good at defense, but that's about it. So, I mean, they put them over the Spurs and over the Jazz and over the Raptors, and I don't see it. Because when you look at the Spurs, they have Tony Parker, Danny Green, Kawhi Leonard, and LaMarcus Aldridge, and Pau Gasol. So it's like the first four alone, like, should put them well above the Clippers. So I think that the Spurs should be number three.
Yeah, I think the Spurs should be three. I think the Jazz should be four. I even probably put the Raptors above the Clippers. It's kind of a close one there. I mean, I'm not saying the Clippers are bad, but I don't think they're the third best lineup.
No, I don't either.
No, looking at their five, no way. You can say that Chris Paul and Blake Griffin are really good players and they could, you know, lead their team to wins, but just going on starting five or starting five, I don't put them above the Raptors, let alone the Spurs or the Jazz.
I'd even put the Celtics ahead of them, like, honestly, and maybe even the Grizzlies. I mean, they've got a good thing. Their biggest strength, I think, is their bench, the Clippers, because they've got a solid bench.
And actually, what's interesting Crawford. is they had him ranked as the 17th best bench. Yeah, they put them all the way down there.
I feel like that's a little bit low because, you know, they've got the sixth man of the year who wins it like almost every year, and Jamal Crawford.
Interesting. So two of their analysts at CBS Sports thought the Clippers were in the top 10 of benches, and two of them thought they were in the bottom 10 of benches. So I think with the Clippers bench, there's a lot of discussion. It's you either are really high on them or you're really low on them. I'm probably more on the low side. I don't think Austin Rivers is that good. I think Paul Pierce is past his prime. I don't think Spates is that good. Wes Johnson, okay. I think Jamal Crawford's good, but
wins sixth man of the year all the time.
Yeah, I think Jamal Crawford, he's a great player, but if you look at overall bench, no. I think 17th is fair. It's funny, they actually put him below the 76ers.
Yeah. That is funny.
That is harsh.
And looking at this, though, thinking about the Clippers, I think they're going to drop off this year. I don't think they're going to be, you know, that number three team in the West again. I think that they'll end up being more of like a five or a six. Mm-hmm. I feel like they're going to have that drop off. The Jazz will jump up. I think it goes Warriors, Spurs, Jazz in the West. And yeah. I think Portland takes a step back. They'll probably still make the playoffs. Same with Oklahoma City. I think those two get in.
See, I don't see Oklahoma City making the playoffs.
Yeah.
I am out. When Durant was out for that one while, what was it, two seasons ago? Not this past season, the season before. They didn't make the playoffs. They didn't look that good. And they got rid of a lot of their tools to try and get Durant back. So I think they're a weaker team than what they were initially. I think they could make a deal at some point in this season, get back into a playoff position. But I think with the team they have today, they are not a playoff team.
So who do you think takes their spot? The Houston Rockets or?
I think if you look just straight at who made the playoffs last year, who made it this year, the Jazz.
That's
I think the Rockets still make the playoffs. The Mavs missed it last year. Didn't they? No. Or were they? No, they were the seven. I think the Mavs still make it.
Grizzlies, barring injury, still make it?
Yeah, Grizzlies. I think Grizzlies are a good team. Timberwolves
could jump up into it.
Timberwolves are one that I think could fight for it.
But like looking at it, they could sneak in at the end.
Yeah, I can see that. I think Timberwolves.
I think they'll for sure be one.
I think the Thunder could sneak into that eight spot, but I don't think they're going to be a contender in the playoffs, and I don't think they're going to look like a strong favorite to be going to the playoffs.
Now think of it this way: I think the NBA would love to have the number one ranked Warriors against the number eight ranked Thunder in the playoffs. Think of the ratings.
Yeah, especially with the whole Durant situation.
Yeah, that's going to be a big deal. Rumor has it the first game of the season for the Warriors is at home against the Thunder.
For all of you who believe that the NBA is rigged, just wait for Oklahoma to get eighth next year, and then you can write your whole write-up about how the whole season was rigged to get this first and eighth spot.
I mean, yeah, they did lose some stuff to try to keep Durant, but they got Oladipo, who's an up-and-coming player. Their post play, like, they weren't getting anything from Ibaka anyway, and so I didn't think it was a bad thing to trade him. I felt like they fleeced Orlando on that trade, and they got a lot more back than they gave up. I think down low, I think that they're all right. Obviously, they've got that gap from not having Kevin Durant, but I think that they have enough good players. I think they still make the playoffs. I don't think they do much in the playoffs, but I think they still make it. And you referenced when Durant was injured for a while, and there was a time where both he and Westbrook were injured, if I remember right.
That's true.
And that's where they had a lot of their losses came there. And when Westbrook came back and was playing by himself, like, they were getting lots of wins still, and they just barely missed out. And so for me, I think that, you know, Westbrook is good enough to carry this team to the playoffs. Obviously, you can't do too much if you're the only one in the playoffs.
Tell that to LeBron James.
I think
that
they'll do it. Well, he's not the only one. Obviously, he did an awesome job. But he had a lot of good players around him.
Tell
to help
that
him out.
To like 2006 LeBron James.
Yeah, where he took his team to the finals
and
on
then
his
got
back.
Swept by the Spurs.
Right, but I mean, you can still to go to the finals as the only player on your team. I think is doing a lot in the playoffs.
Yeah, it is for sure. But I mean, at the same time, it's the Eastern Conference. We're talking about the West, and you can't do that. You can't get away with that.
Especially this year, the West is stacked.
Well, any year,
I see too much of a comparison. Like, I honestly think Westbrook and Harden are very similar players. I think they're both good. I don't know how much they really help your team, though. I wouldn't want them I honestly, if today they told me you can have Westbrook or Harden on the Jazz, I would say no. I don't want either of them.
Well, I mean, Jazz are already set. But if you were a team that was in need of a player, I would take Westbrook every day of the week.
Right.
Because the guy's going to get you rebounds, assists, and points. Obviously, he could be a little bit better as a passer, but he's also a great defender. And he learned that when he was at UCLA under totally blanking on his name. Anyway, he learned it at UCLA, and he's been a great defender throughout his career. And so I see him as much better than Harden, because Harden is great on offense, but dude doesn't play defense at all.
He's also great at turnovers. He set the record for most turnovers in a season by a mile. Yeah. I mean, this guy's just turning the ball over with every pass. I think he's an all-or-nothing type of player, and I don't think that helps. And I think Westbrook is kind of similar. He's a high-maintenance guy. I think that's part of the reason Durant left. I think Durant was sick of working with a high-maintenance player that Durant didn't feel like was helping. That's why he went to a system that has – it's more in his favor. I look at Curry and I look at Thompson. I think both of those guys are low-maintenance in comparison to Westbrook. Draymond Green, all right, there's a debate there. But I definitely think that Westbrook is a high-maintenance player. He doesn't make his team better. I wouldn't want him. If today somebody said, all right, the Jazz have just traded George Hill for Westbrook, I'd be upset. That's not what I want.
I like Westbrook. I think he's a great player.
Looks like a sandwich.
He does look like a sandwich. But I honestly would probably like Westbrook over George Hill right now. I think Westbrook has a lot more years as like a dominating offensive threat. Is he a great ball handler? Like, is he gonna move the ball around? Not great. But we have Hayward for that. We have Favors for that.
But that's the problem, is if you have two players that are demanding the ball, if Hayward and Westbrook like bringing the ball down, like being the center of that offense, what are you going to do? That's the problem. That's the why thing. Durant wasn't happy.
Westbrook wouldn't fit in the Jazz system anyway, just because the Jazz have kind of gone with the Spurs model of, you know, we're not focusing on any one player getting offense. Like, we're sharing it and seeing who can have the opening to score. And you know, I think that Westbrook, you know, it would take a lot for him to be able to adapt to be in that situation. But really, that the way that the Thunder play, where they were doing isolation, really got them in trouble. But I think that Westbrook's a great player. I think that he's going to become a better passer with Durant gone, because, you know, rather than having to worry about getting the ball to Durant, he can just find the open guy when someone comes off on him. And you know, maybe he still like holds it and doesn't do super well, but I think that, you know, he's going to develop as a passer a little bit because Durant isn't there, because he can go to anyone on the team instead of just trying to force it to Durant, because he knows that Durant needs to have touches. And so for me, I think that Westbrook is good enough. I think that he helps them get in the playoffs. Another team that I think will make it back to the playoffs because of a good player would be, I think the Pelicans make it back to the playoffs. Okay. Because
that's a fair battle. Yeah.
Because I'm blanking on his name, but Unibrow.
Davis.
Davis, yeah. He's so good that I think that he'll be able to help them figure out what ills them.
Davis is as good of a player as hideous as he is. Like, they're on equal of, like, he's as ugly as good of a player as he is. So.
All right. Okay, so we're going to go on. The next topic also was pretty... Well, big news yesterday. It came out that 25 LGBT groups have sent a letter to the Big 12, to the 10 university presidents, to a couple of the other staff members there, athletic directors, basically begging, or not begging, but urging the Big 12 to leave BYU out. Don't let BYU into the Big 12. And that's because of discrimination. Honestly, I was skeptical on BYU getting in the first place. The way I saw it, BYU would have been a good option. I think football-wise, great option. Everywhere else, not as much. The way I saw it, if they expanded to two, BYU would be left in the cold. If they expanded to four, I thought BYU would possibly get in. But I think with this, BYU's out. I do not see BYU getting in. I don't think BYU will get into any conference, Power 5 conference in the future. I think this is killer. I think this is such a big deal. I mean, look at how the NBA moved the All-Star game. It's the same idea. If you have discrimination based on a specific group, and in this case, the LGBT community, the organization is going to have to do something. And I think right now, where BYU's kind of up for grabs on if they go in or not, I think that it's just not a smart business decision for the Big 12. All you're doing is opening yourself up to bad press and to liabilities. I don't think it's a good choice.
Yeah, I think if BYU had been like one of their first choices, I don't think this would have been enough to knock BYU out. But the fact that they were, honestly, in mind, they were like fighting for that fourth spot if the Big 12 expanded four teams, I think how it was now with BYU being such a long shot anyways, I think this is a killer. I don't think they make it into the Big 12
because of this. Like it was a long shot. Because you think about it, like when they pulled the coaches, BYU and Houston were tied for the two teams that they wanted, like the most coaches voted on wanting them
for
to
football.
Bring them in. For football.
Exactly.
Yeah. But now here's the thing. BYU has a huge fan base all across the country. And so if the Big 12 were to expand to include BYU, they're getting TVs all across the country that are going to be watching Big 12 football. And because you have that built-in fan base of LDS people. And with this whole issue with the, you know, the LGBT act or group or whatever that is, you know, urging them to not do it. And they say that it goes against, you know, the standards of the Big 12. And to me, I don't really think it does, because you already have Baylor and TCU that are both Christian universities.
See, now that's where it's different. Baylor, about 2 years ago, changed their equivalent to the honor code and removed any reference to homosexual relationships. They opened up and said, we're fine with whatever you do. TCU didn't have anything specific, but also recently they sent out a letter saying that they are anti-discriminatory. They've both taken steps recently that have said, look, we're not going to discriminate. We're not going to touch this community. This is not our place. And I think the issue is that BYU hasn't done that.
Yeah, the thing about it is that they referenced in that letter is that they were worried if someone who was coming to watch a game from a visiting team, that they would be discriminated against. And you know, BYU came out today and were saying, you know, we invite everyone to like come and there wouldn't be discrimination. And I mean, the main issue would be, you know, for those people that were going to BYU.
Yeah.
But if I were a part of that group, I wouldn't want to go to BYU, because that's the way BYU is set up. It's very religious, more so than I think a lot of Christian universities are.
Oh yeah.
But like you would know going in that that's how it is. It wasn't like this is going to be something that sprung upon you. And I think that, you know, BYU is a private university. It's not like a state-funded one. So I think that you can't really complain too much about it unless it becomes an issue with visiting schools.
See, my thing is, it's not about specifically what's... Well, okay. It's a business decision. If you look at somebody and you say, okay, they are opening the door to potential liability. Today, there's no issue. But 5 years down the road, what if there's an incident? Do we want our conference linked to that? And you have a place that it has that. Apparently... this is why BYU was left out of the Pac-12. The rumor has it that BYU was on the top of the list for the Pac-12 because at that point, it was 2010, they were doing great. That was good Bronco years. And then 2 years before it was Prop 8. BYU and the LDS Church was part of that Prop 8, a big stance, and apparently all of the California schools said, we won't touch them. We don't want them. That's why they got left out of the Pac-12, apparently. And I think it's what's going to leave them out of the Big 12. It's what's going to leave them out of every conference. They're looking at this and they're saying, this is a potential liability. This is bad press for us. We don't want that. And I just don't think it's a good idea. Now, to your comment about Houston and BYU being the top picks from the football coaches, I think the question then becomes, why are you expanding? Are you expanding for football? Are you expanding to widen your press? What are you looking for? I think if you're expanding for football and football only, BYU and Houston are great options. But if you're looking for press, right now BYU's not the best option. I think Cincinnati and I think UCF would be great options. You're getting two big football states, and you're getting the recruiting there as well. I think UConn is another great option. You're getting national championships every year from women's basketball. Men's basketball is a contender. You're basically getting another Kansas. But I think right now, when you look at it, there's so many different options. This is too big of a black eye on BYU for them to go and say, you know, we don't really worry about it. I think that's the problem.
See, I still think that BYU is still like a good option from the business standpoint of, yeah, with the football program, they've got a big history. They've won like every award that you could think of in the past. Another thing is, if they come up here, then that opens up a whole state, at the very least, to watching these games and also.
But recruiting. I think a 4 million or just over 3 million person state isn't a priority. Utah's not a priority. That TV market isn't very big. Getting the city of Cincinnati, the state of Ohio, getting Florida is a much bigger priority.
But I don't think they're going to get much from Florida because obviously, you know, UCF and USF and all these other Florida universities, you know, they pale in comparison to the University of Florida and Florida State. And so I don't really think that they're going to have much success there. Whereas I think that Utah is an untapped market. I mean, obviously the Pac-12 is here with Utah, but I still think there's a lot of option. And beyond that, it isn't just Utah, and that's the benefit of BYU and it being, you know, church run school by the LDS Church.
Yeah.
They have people all over the country. And so not only does it open up a lot of opportunities here in Utah, but also everywhere across the country.
Okay.
So that's where I'm looking at it.
See, now, here's one thing that I think is interesting. For BYU or any of these schools to be approved, they need 8 of the 10 presidents to approve them.
Yeah.
That's where I think there's a big issue. I think a lot of people aren't going to look at it. One of the things is the Big 12 has to deal with some bad press right now with Baylor.
Yeah.
I think they're looking at Baylor and saying, man, we've got issues going on here. Now, we don't want to add BYU into that bad press. And I think getting 8 of the 10 presidents is going to be a stretch.
And the thing is that this LGBTQ isn't the only issue they've had this year. BYU has been in the press this year for their honor code and all of the issues they've had with rape. And so obviously, like, if it was just these letters alone and BYU besides that had been like a sparkling, you know, shine for the last year, it might not be a big issue. But BYU has had a lot of bad press recently, and I think with Baylor, I think that's going to be a huge issue, is inviting this new team who already this year has been in the news for multiple issues with wide-ranging groups, including the LDS community had a little backlash for BYU. So.
Yeah, and I think the fact that BYU likes to be the king of the roost, they like to say, here's what we will do, and we will do this. I think they already have a Texas that likes to do that. I think Oklahoma already likes to do that. And I think it's tough. I just don't see that being a good fit. They won't play on Sundays. They have a lot of demands on what they'll do. And I think it's just going to make it really tough. And as for football, when I look at who's in the Big 12, you look at it, Baylor's better than BYU. Oklahoma State, Texas normally, TCU, Texas Tech, Kansas State has good years. I look at it, BYU probably at best is looking to be the 5th or 6th best team in the conference.
I don't know about that one. But
I think that's a stretch. You're really going to put them above Oklahoma, Baylor, TCU, Texas Tech.
Texas Tech, probably. I think they're more consistent than Texas Tech in terms of football.
But, I mean, you could just look at the recent track record of BYU versus those teams. They beat Texas twice. They beat Oklahoma. They've beaten TCU when they were in the same conference. So, I mean, I'm sure that they could compete with them. And now I'm not a BYU fan. Obviously, I go here and I badmouth BYU a lot, but to me it would make sense for them to add them because they're probably the team out there that isn't affiliated with the best history with football in particular. And really this is mostly about football because, you know, does the Big 12 really care that much about any other sports? Yeah, I mean, yeah, their basketball has gotten better recently. Kansas has always been relevant, but other than Kansas, you know, teams in the Big 12 weren't really, they didn't care about basketball until recently. But now they've got several good teams, and they did a good job. I feel like that's why they added West Virginia was for football, because they were good for a while. They've also been good at basketball for a while, too. But I think this is mostly about football because, yeah, really, I mean, what else does the Big 12 care about? Because for me, the big thing in all these areas, mostly like Texas and all that, it's all about football. Like, they make huge stadiums for high schools, and they love football down in the South, and especially in Texas, and that's where most of the base is for the Big 12, is in Texas. You know, Texas is kind of the king of the Big 12, and you know, if it weren't for Texas, the Big 12 wouldn't exist. But they have to expand somewhere, or the conference is going to disappear because they'll be swallowed up by the other big conferences, the other Power Four conferences. You know, the Pac-12 would come in, and you know, they almost took Texas back when they lost Colorado, like the Big 12 lost Colorado and Nebraska. You know, Texas almost went to the Pac-12, but they're like, all right, well, we'll stay, and they saved the conference. So they've got to expand, but I don't know really Cincinnati. Yeah, I mean, you get a part of Ohio, but that's Ohio State's area. I mean, you're not gonna overcome Ohio State in that area.
But look at BYU's upcoming year, though. Do you really want the team you're bringing into, like, your big ceremonial year, then we're looking to go 4-8 or worse? Yeah. Like, if it's for football, do you want your, like, their, like, first year to look atrocious? Like,
yeah. Well, I mean, their first year would be next year.
That's right.
They obviously, going in, it would look bad to have a 4-8 team, which I think they're going to go 4-8. So, yeah, that obviously will look bad. But at the same time, you know, they've got the rich history, and they don't focus so much on the recent ones, or, you know, Texas wouldn't still be king because they've been kind of, you know, subpar lately.
See, my thing is, and it shouldn't always be this way, but I think it comes down to politics. That's my thought. I think BYU football-wise is a great option. Basketball-wise is a decent option. But I look at everything else, and that's the problem with BYU. They always come with everything else. It's never just sports. It's always one thing or another. And I think for a conference like the Big 12 right now, where they have other issues going on, they're looking at it and saying, you know, we're going to go with the safe options right now. The Houston, who's ranked 13 in the country. These other schools that have done, that are good options, you know, have done well. I think they'll be fine with other options. I don't think BYU is a need. I think BYU would have been a like to have, but I think with everything else piling up on it, BYU just, it doesn't look good. And I think for the Big 12 right now, I think the fact that they sent this letter also is a big thing, because if they accept BYU into the Big 12, guess who the Big 12 just made an enemy? 25 different civil rights groups. One of them being the National Organization of Women. That's not a LGBT community. That is a women's rights group. And to take those type of communities, these large names, and basically say, you know, we don't honor your opinion. What you're saying doesn't matter to us. I think it's a huge slap in the face. And I think that's why the Big 12 can't let BYU in. Today, the Big 12 cannot. There's no way they can, unless they want to have huge issues down the road.
I think we're probably just going to have to agree to disagree on this one. I don't think we're going to be talking either group into the other group.
Okay.
Yeah. I feel like in the end it does get done. They're going to have to obviously address that, and they do it, and they say, you know, we've listened to you guys, but we feel like if this is assuming that they do take BYU, they will have to come up with something saying, you know, we've heard your worries and all that, but like we've looked into it and we don't feel like this is going to be an issue. But they could also write in something with them joining saying, hey, you know, if we have issues along these lines, then we're free to kick you guys out. And that could be a thing that happens in like a conditional entry. Like, look, later on, if we don't like how things are going with these like groups, then we have the right to kick you out. Mm-hmm. And you know, BYU might say, yeah, no, we don't want to deal with that, and then it might happen that way. But that's how I see it happening, is I think it will get done, but obviously they will have to address those concerns from people.
All right. Okay, so the next topic we have is actually our heat of the week. Nick Saban recently has had some interesting press. He is not allowing Maurice Smith to transfer to Georgia. Just a little bit of backstory. Maurice Smith is a senior. He is a graduate student. He has 1 year eligible, and Nick Saban said no, based off of SEC rules that do not exist. Basically, I think Nick Saban is a complete idiot. I don't understand why you wouldn't allow a player to transfer. He is your backup. He has started 2 games in his career. He just hasn't done anything.
He started more than 2 games, but regardless, this is a player that you for four. I'm assuming he redshirted. So for four years has put all this time and money to help train this player, help raise this player up, and then in his final year, he's like, "Yeah, you know what? I want to go to a school that you're gonna have to play against. So thanks for making me the player I am. See you on the field, buddy." I think if it was out of conference, I don't think it's right for Nick Saban to say, no, you can't leave as a backup. But I think with the fact that he wants to go to a SEC team where his assistant coach just left to is a huge issue.
Keep in mind, that is the assistant coach that was in charge of the defense, which is where Maurice Smith was, or is, still is. He's a defensive player. He had his coach that he liked. His coach went to Georgia. Why can't he follow his coach?
Because, one, he's going to another SEC team, which is my biggest issue, is why do you think it's okay for him to leave to a team where he's going to end up playing them? Like, that's the biggest deterrent I see. But the other one is if you let him play or leave, that opens up the door for anybody else to leave. Like, it sets a precedent, and you can't all of a sudden on the second player say, no, you can't leave. You let Maurice leave, so why can't I leave? So having, like, obviously not very many players are going to want to leave Alabama for Georgia, but I think barring them from going to another SEC team, in my opinion, is a smart move.
Okay, first of all, Alabama does not play Georgia this year. Second of all, I think what difference is there from any NFL player going from one school to another?
This isn't NFL. They're not getting paid.
Then why can't he get what's best for him? Why can't he go and do what he needs to do? I think in a position where he's not able to play, he's not able to do anything. He's started 2 games. Yes, he's played a few more, but he's only started 2.
Okay, you're right. He's started 2, but he's played 22 out of May. I think he had like 42 that he could have played in with all
but
of like the Bulls.
Same time, that could just be special teams.
No, he has.
I'm just saying, like, that could be misleading.
It could be, but looking at his stats, well, he has a forced fumble and a fumble recovery last year. So, again, that could be special teams. But he also has a lot of tackles, and he has a sack, a couple sacks. So, obviously, he's playing on the defense
But it doesn't sound like it's very much.
Right.
And who is he playing? Is he coming in when they're playing Weber State and they're up by 60 and he gets an interception and a sack and a forced fumble against Weber State?
And garbage time.
He's a player who hasn't gotten playing time. He's sitting there saying, I had a coach that I liked. He went to Georgia. I'm a senior. I want to do what I want to do.
And on top of that, he already graduated.
You're talking about a player who graduated in 3 years. Right. Can we not honor that? He graduated in 3 years.
I have nothing against that. He's a great player. But I'm saying if he wanted to go anywhere else besides an SEC team, I don't think there's any reason to block it. But the fact that he's going to another SEC team where he might have to play them in a playoff, or it might be like they're in a race in the SEC against each other. I'm not sure which Georgia falls into.
They're in a different division, so they would meet in the championship if they were to. But right. My thing is, Alabama allowed Chris Black to transfer to Missouri this season. This summer, they allowed their player to transfer to Missouri, also in the SEC.
Also why? Not a threat.
Well, this guy's not a threat. Yeah. You're looking at two guys that haven't played much, and they're saying, you know, it's okay for you to transfer. Why is one okay and one not the other? Do you know what it is? It's not about the player. It's Nick Saban mad at Kirby Smart for leaving. That's what it is. It is has nothing to do with Murray Smith. It has to do with Nick Saban mad that he didn't get his way, and now he's going to make this player suffer.
I don't think it's just that he's mad, but I think it also has to do with the fact that if he lets one player leave, that does open the door for anybody else who wants to leave.
But he did leave. And
but really, he allowed one to.
But no,
he left the thing. He let the coach leave. He's not letting a player
leave. No, he let Chris Black leave to Missouri.
Not to Georgia. That's what I'm saying.
Still in the SEC.
Not with his assistant coach in Missouri.
Opposite division in the conference. Either way, to me, I think it's ridiculous, the power structure, because, you know, at any time, you know, Nick Saban can say to a guy who's, you know, chosen to go to Alabama and say, you know what, you're not quite good enough, I'm cutting you. And, yeah, the player can't do anything. Whereas, like, if a player wants to leave, they have to get permission. And I'm all for the whole thing where you don't just transfer to wherever and get to play the same year. But this guy, he already graduated from Alabama. Why does he not have the option to decide if he leaves or not? That's where I see the issue.
Yeah, he's being held hostage. Yeah,
he could leave anywhere else besides Georgia, and Nick Saban doesn't say anything.
You don't know that. But either way, I think it's dumb.
Obviously, I do, because he let the guy leave to Missouri. The point you keep making. So obviously, it has to do with Georgia and not with him wanting to leave.
What I'm saying is maybe not anywhere. There could be a lot of places. If
he wants playing time, he can go to literally any other school in the nation, get play time, if that's what he really wants.
Maybe he wants to play for a good school, too.
But that's the
thing. He just can't go to Georgia.
But he has a relationship with the coach. That's why he wants to go to Georgia. He has a relationship. He has somewhere that he says, look, I like Kirby Smart. I like the system that he runs. I want to be part of that system. I don't know how all of these other coaches are. I want what's best for me. What's wrong for him to do that? I think the idea is that it's a joke, the transfer rules.
Yeah,
that's my biggest issue, transfer rules. Nick Saban says he's not allowing it because of SEC rules. There's no SEC rule saying don't allow transfers within conference. The only rule is that in the SEC, if you transfer to another SEC school, even if you're a graduate, you have to wait 1 year before playing. That's fair. It's the only conference in which you have a graduate student has to wait.
Then how is Maurice Smith eligible then? Is this his fourth year?
It would be his fourth year of eligibility. So okay, you so can he'll graduate go on his fifth. Mm-hmm. Say, like, I could graduate and then decide I want to play football and try out for the team, and I'd have 4 years of eligibility,
right?
Even though I've already graduated. So he still has 1 year of eligibility.
Yeah.
And for me, I hate this. I hate the power structure because, you know, there's no control for the guys, for these players, going back to it. I mean, I totally understand Nick Saban not wanting to let one of his players go to a rival, but to me, I think that it's ridiculous that he has that much power, because, like I said, he can cut any guy at any time, and they're done. Like, they're screwed. They lose their scholarship, and, like, they made the decision to go there, and if he cuts them, they're SOL.
Yeah.
And it's not fair to the players who are putting themselves out there to not be able to make their own decisions. Like, right here, he graduated. Why can't he choose to leave?
He just can't go to Georgia.
But why?
Because he doesn't want a player leaving for his assistant coach. Obviously, yes, he is a little butthurt that his assistant coach left to Georgia. Obviously, that plays into it. But it also has an issue that if he lets one player leave, it opens up, it sets precedent, and all of these other players can leave if they want to.
But
and
my thing is, it's not about
it shouldn't be
Nick
personal.
Saban not wanting him to go. My thing is, why aren't the players allowed to make that decision for themselves? Because, like, why does the coach get the final say when the coach can cut them at any time? Like, it's a very one-sided agreement.
Of course.
Because the coaches have all the power, which, I mean, at times is good or whatever, but, you know, they have all the power. They can cut you, but you can't leave on your own accord. You can't decide you don't fit with the program, but the coach can, and you don't have a choice in it. Yeah. That's what bugs me.
That's my thing. It's the same idea. If Bill Belichick dislikes Rex Ryan, that's between the two of them. But a player on the Patriots shouldn't be banned from changing teams to go play for Rex Ryan. That's ridiculous. You're talking about a player who he has 1 year more of eligibility. He has one more shot at making the NFL, doing something with his life, and he's going to get held back just because Nick Saban has something against Kirby Smart.
Okay, I have a few points. One, if he was good enough to go to the NFL, he'd be starting at Alabama. Or he would go to another school that isn't Georgia, where he would get a start and show his prowess. Two, in the NFL, if you're under contract, you cannot just leave to the Jets. You have to get traded, and teams can refuse to trade you until your contract is up. So that's completely different.
But
when you're getting picked up by a school, you're basically like committing yourself to go to this school unless the coach allows you to leave. I'm pretty sure when Maurice Smith got his letter you made it to Alabama and you're getting a scholarship, he probably was super stoked and was like, I'm never leaving Alabama.
I bet he probably didn't know how many cornerbacks they also recruited and signed, and he probably didn't know. Because here's the
you're
thing. Here's what I hate. College football coaches can come out and find a quarterback and say, you are our guy. You're going to be our starter. You're going to do all of this. We love you. We love you. We love you. And then what happens? They never play. They never have any chance. Why is it that they can't transfer and do something else? Why do we have these ridiculous rules in place saying, look, you may have been lied to saying that you were going to be a starter your junior year, that you were going to get this amount of playing time. I think it's fair if they have a rule that says if you don't play X percentage of time by X or by Y point in your career, you are allowed to transfer. And I think he would fit that rule based on where he's at. Two starts in his first three seasons.
Yeah, but played about 50% of the games.
Well, okay, where's the minutes that says that?
I don't have it. No, sorry, not playing 50% of the games.
The number
playing
of games.
50%, playing in 50% of the games.
But how long? That's the thing.
Yeah, I don't you can't just drop somebody in. And they would count it as playing the game. You could go in time for the last kneel of the game and they could count it. So that's
You're
why
right.
It's deceptive. Like, you can't actually tell how much he's actually played.
You're right. But, again, I actually have no issue with you changing the transfer rules. I don't like the transfer rules either where the coach has all of the power. But I think the coach should have the power to block a player from going into a team in the same conference, which is where this would apply.
I think it's fair to say you have to wait a year.
Yeah.
I don't think it's fair to say, you know what? Okay, here's the other idea. What about Will Muschamp? He was a coach at one team in the SEC, went to be a coach at another team in the SEC, and then went to a third team in the SEC just 1 year after the other. There was time
paid.
There. So, I mean, there's the other issue. Why is he allowed to just jump from one place to another, go to competitors, but yet a player who has 4 years... a limit of 4 years to do something for himself has no option there. Why doesn't Will Muschamp have to wait a year before coaching? Why doesn't that happen? It's the idea that you have a player that has 4 years. You have a coach that can coach for 20 years. Why is it that they aren't the ones that have to wait?
Because coaches are the ones getting paid for their services. These students are getting paid to come play. Obviously, there is a little
double
standard
there. So for their services.
There. Yeah.
Fair, but these universities aren't putting money into training these coaches. These coaches aren't.
Oh, so wait,
usually,
these universities aren't putting money into their coaches?
No, they aren't putting money into training the coaches.
So you're saying none of the coaches in the SEC go through any type of trainings?
I'm not saying that.
So they don't put money into training them?
The difference is, I think, for me anyways, that these players are coming to these schools and these schools are putting all this time and money into training them to get them to where they should be. They obviously should have a say if you're going to go to a school in the same conference.
Yeah.
Like, obviously, like, it's different in the professionals, but if you talked to the Thunder and you said, do you want to put all of this money and time into Durant just for him to leave to the Warriors? Nobody wants that. Like,
but at the end of the day, it was Durant's decision.
Right.
It's the player's decision.
And that's the thing that bugs me. It's just the players don't get to decide their own fate. And that's what bugs me. Yeah, they make the agreement, but it's very one-sided. You know, the team can opt out of it at any time, but the player cannot.
And how can you expect an 18-year-old, fresh out of high school, with no legal understanding, to understand the contract that he just signed with the University of Alabama? To understand that, you know, Nick Saban doesn't have to keep a single promise that he made me in recruiting, but for some reason, I have to keep every promise I made him?
Yeah. You don't have to keep all the promises. You don't have to show up to practice. You don't have to do all this. You'll get cut. But you don't have to keep these promises.
See, that's my issue. I think there should be accountability on both sides.
Obviously, I think the players should be able to go anywhere they want to go as long as it's not in the same conference.
Yeah, I mean,
I get all of these points, but like you have to look at it at like,
I understand why Nick Saban wouldn't want to let him go, but I just don't get why the player has no say. That's the part that bugs me. I understand Nick Saban thinking, you know, I spent all this time teaching you how to be better. I don't want you to leave and go to another team in the SEC. I get that, but I don't like how there's like, it's very one-sided agreement, and the player doesn't get a choose. And that's what bugs me.
I mean, one thing maybe this would help. Maybe if you go and you transfer, there can be a fine. And it can be paid by the other school. The payer specifically doesn't have to pay.
So always be paid by the other school.
Yeah, obviously.
Like,
or by the player.
Or by the player.
Well, even if the player has to play, they also don't pay the players with cars or, you know,
no, I'm saying it can be Georgia. There's no issue with Georgia paying this fine. But Georgia pays a fine saying, look, Alabama, you put money into our player. Here's money back, and then it's fine.
Okay, then let's do that. But until then, Maurice Smith can't leave to a team in the same conference.
Yeah.
Because you just admitted that, like, obviously it's a detriment to the Alabama. Like,
I agree. Alabama doesn't want that to happen. But then why didn't Alabama make or do good on their promises? If Maurice Smith is that essential to them, why the heck doesn't he play?
Yeah.
Because he's not good enough. He didn't fulfill the promises that he was going
to
be good.
Why do they care if he leaves if he's not that good?
They don't care if he leaves. They just care if he goes to Georgia. I honestly think if he would have said any of the other team in the SEC, Nick Saban might not have said anything. But it's the fact that it's Georgia.
He would definitely say no to LSU.
That's fair.
And Auburn.
And Mississippi State and Auburn.
And maybe Florida.
I don't know about Mississippi and Mississippi State. But
they're the same division.
Yeah, any of the division ones he's going to block.
Any division, they're going to be like, yeah, no.
That's fair.
Honestly, I look at it, I just say, this is a joke. This is a complete joke. The NCAA transfer rules are a joke. You can look at Utah, who can cherry-pick a player from Utah State for basketball 2 days before the season starts, but yet for some reason, when they've got a player that's up for grabs, they can say, no, you're not going to BYU or Utah State or any Pac-12 school. Have fun at Weber State.
I mean, that player had the choice to go to Utah. He wasn't stuck with Utah State. His coaches at Utah State couldn't stop him from leaving. It's a one-sided thing. The player had to choose, and the coach couldn't choose for him to stay.
So wait, so you side with Collette there? Or are you against?
No, saying that you have issues with the player on one side and the coaches on the other.
Yeah, my thing is I have an issue with both. I think Utah blocked
why
on,
the player should
blocked
have
very
an,
conveniently.
The player should be able to leave for them. What's better for them?
The problem is with the whole Collette situation is that they talked to him while he was still going here.
Yeah,
and you're
they
not
broke
supposed
rules.
To do that.
Right.
And that's the issue. I mean, obviously, the coach at Georgia already knew this guy, and he maybe told him, like, before he actually left, you know, if you want to come over, like, I would love to have you come over. But he was still part of Alabama. Like, it would be fine. He already knew the coach. He wanted to go because of the coach.
I'm pretty sure if he's saying he wants to leave to Georgia has already told him he has a starting spot.
See, the thing
which
is,
they have no right telling him.
Not necessarily. There he are could be like windows. A nickelback or something. He would say like, "We're going to get you playing time." That doesn't mean he's going to be a starter, but he'd actually get a chance to show his things. He could be a starter.
They can't contact another player for recruiting unless the coach has given them permission. I'm almost positive.
But that's what I'm saying. Is
the fact that unless the last thing he said something while he was at Alabama, like, "Hey, I'm leaving to Georgia."
That's what I was saying.
Do you want to come?
That probably was how it went down.
But he wasn't at Georgia at the time. There's no way he could say that for sure.
So no, he already agreed to be their coach.
Right. But I doubt he talked to Georgia and said, "I want this player to start." And they said, "Oh, yeah, okay."
Well, he has the final say. He's the coach.
Fair.
I think, yes, it's a broken system. That's my biggest issue with it. It's an all broken system where one team can say, "This is what we want, and we want this," and another school suffers from it. The player suffers from it. Alabama won't care. And at this point, even if Smith doesn't leave Alabama, what is that going to benefit Alabama? They've got a player who doesn't want to be there. How hard do you think he's going to work?
Rory Smith leaving Alabama. He graduated. He's not playing for Alabama next year. I can guarantee it.
Well, he's still technically part of Alabama.
Right.
Yeah.
And he's got one more year of eligibility, and the season starts in a month.
Right.
So if he doesn't go somewhere quick, guess where he's ending up? And that's where I think the joke is. I have no issue with him transferring, waiting a year, and then playing at Georgia. That's what he wants to do. Why can't a player do what he wants to do?
Why can't Collette leave to Utah when he's not going to be going to the NBA playing for Utah State?
It was fine that Collette wanted to leave. My issue with Collette was that he did it 2 days before.
That's my biggest issue.
Like, that was fine. Like, you saw this last year. Lou Evans decided he wanted to leave because he didn't want to deal with the competition that was coming in for a spot at his post. So he decided he wanted to leave, and that was fine.
Okay.
It wasn't 2 days before the season. Obviously, it still puts the team in a bind because they don't have someone who can fill that roster spot with. But, you know, it was his decision. He was a graduate student. He could leave and doesn't have to sit out. That's fine. But when you wait until 2 days before the season and decide you're going to leave, I take issue with that. Because that is much worse. I mean, when I talked to, Coach Duryea, he said, it put him in a bind because, with him leaving, they've got one less guy than they were planning on.
I'm not saying he's not a scumbag, but I've heard a lot of people having issue with him leaving to Utah in general. The fact that he was able to leave to Utah.
I'm fine with him leaving if he doesn't want to be here. But it was just the timing for me that bugged me. But I can't speak for everybody.
That
might
have been the best for Collette. How do you know it's not the best for Collette? It's going to be detrimental to Nick Saban if he goes to Georgia. You could make the argument.
I think there's a transfer window. I think you say, look, certain players, here's your window where you can transfer. And that's fair.
I'm fine with setting that up, but
Maurice Smith would probably have sat there in the window and said, "Look, I want to go to Georgia."
I still don't like the idea of a transfer being able to go to a team in the same conference,
even if they won't play each other.
Yeah,
during the history during that time he played,
you can't say they won't meet up in the playoffs. You can't say they won't meet up in the championship game. You can't say that Maurice Smith might not be a breakout player next year and might be the biggest player on their defense. He won't. Well,
then whose fault is that? Alabama's for not playing him.
Yeah.
You can't blame anyone other than Alabama if he goes and does well against Alabama. Because guess who they didn't use? Maurice Smith.
You can't say it's because they didn't use him.
They didn't use him.
Maybe he just didn't fit in the system. It doesn't matter. The fact that he's
why do they want him to stay?
Because he's going to Georgia. They don't want to play against him in Georgia.
So it's not a story of transferring being bad. It's a story of Nick Saban being on his high horse and saying, I don't want my
being vindictive
reserve to go to another
there
school.
There's a lot of bit of butt hurt there. But
he's being super vindictive.
I don't think he's an idiot for not wanting him to go to a team in the same conference where his assistant coach was.
I'm with That's you where for I take him issue. Not wanting the player to go there.
I don't think it's a joke.
But I just have the problem with the player not getting any say, especially when he's a graduate, like he's already graduated.
Yeah, I understand. If the player hasn't graduated, he's where he's at. He's technically at school for an education. Football is technically an extra part of it. But my yeah, it's extracurricular. I think if you're not graduated, guess where you're at. But as soon as you graduate, you should be fine with going wherever you darn well please.
But it sounds like we're not going to come to an agreement here. But
no, and it's we're well over time.
That's the benefit of the heat of the week. We get to argue and argue and argue.
And we'll never come to a consensus except for about Boise State.
Just to let you know, we did argue one night. What we argued for probably 45 minutes.
It was longer than that. Okay. And I mean, like,
and it was the stupidest argument
using
ever.
Using expletives, and
we were just like, screaming at each other.
Screaming at each other.
And I mean, our roommates were furious. Everything was terrible. We were just screaming, and I don't even remember what it was about. Well, it was about soccer.
That's happened.
It was about Chile, Argentina. That's what it was. It was about Chile, Argentina. I remember the argument now. It was a ridiculously stupid argument. We screamed for hours at each other.
It was stupid, but I still hold my point. But it doesn't matter.
I was still right.
We'll talk about it next week, even if it is our fantasy football week. But as always, follow us at Competitive USU, on Twitter, and check us out next week. I think, are we starting next week on Thursday morning?
No, it'll be the week after.
Okay, so next week we'll be here at Tuesday at 5, but following week we'll be starting on Thursday morning. So,
all right, peace out.